Okay, we'll call to order the House Revenue Committee meeting. Welcome everybody here on this bright and sunny Monday morning. We've got a couple bills before us today. We'll take them in reverse order because we have Senator Messerly joining us on House Bill 2454. And committee, I've got a bill up in the Transportation Committee that will be getting buzzed on here for a work session here at some point during the course of the meeting. So if that happens before we are done here today, I will beg your leave for a few minutes anyway to run up there. Let's start, though, with House Bill 2454. Does that mean we have to switch here, or Mazin, are you with us on that one, too?
I am actually with 2454.
You're with 2454. Okay, let me open a public hearing, then, on House Bill 2454 and invite Senator Messerly to come to the table. You want to step down?
I will.
Okay, if you want to give us the overview while they're getting their thoughts collected, and we'll go.
All right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2454 tries to take advantage of the new exemption that was granted to the newly formed airport districts. Airport districts were given the ability to form lately, and this probably is the first one in North Bend Airport District that was formed and to be extended the exemption that is offered to municipalities and other local governments. Those properties that are coming to the district are not new, and they are not taxable properties that are coming to an exemption program. They're going from an older or a different exempt ownership to a new exempt ownership. The difference, the change is having the entity itself defined and exempt by law. This, I think, on the advice of the AG, that this needs to be done. However, in the future, if other airport districts start coming online and acquiring property that has previously been taxed and become exempt, then there will be a revenue impact in that full implementation scenario. However, as it stands today, there is no revenue impact.
So if you're just taking a municipal airport and converting it to an airport district under this new configuration, there's no revenue impact. The revenue impact would be if you were to create a new district and take something off the rolls in the future.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, let's welcome Senator Messerly, Representative Verger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Joanne Verger, Oregon State Representative from District 9. By way of a little background, the municipality of North Bend has owned the airport for years, and it has just been a very difficult challenge for the city to maintain the airport. And so they transferred it over to the Port of Coos Bay, which was a natural marriage. However, the port found great difficulty in trying to handle the finances of the airport. And so they went to the voters, and they approved an airport district. Well, what happened was that under the law, the airport properties, when it was with North Bend and the port, were exempt. But there's no line in there that specifies airport district, even though it's the same property. And you'll notice in the bill, it's an A engrossed, and on line 20, it is within or contiguous to the airport property. And I think that's really important because you don't want anything to be someone to go off in some other area and create a part of the property and have it within the airport district. I have with me today Darren Griffith from the Department of Aviation and the director of the North Bend Airport District, Gary Letelier, and they will be joining me later, but I'd like to give Senator Messerly an opportunity to speak to the bill so that he can go on to his important work.
All right. Good morning, Senator. Good to see you.
Good to be here, Chair Shetterly. I'm Ken Messerly, Senate District 5. I'm just here to continue to support this project. As was stated by the staff, it will not be any change in the taxable properties to the state or the local governments. It's simply redefining who would maintain the exemption. I want to speak very briefly also to the importance of to the airport district and to the community that we maintain that airport. We've heard the governor say that how important it is that you have an airport in a region if you're trying to improve your economy and that you have the other infrastructures as well. As you know, our region has suffered for over 20 years, continually declining. Our schools are still have declining enrollment, which is a very good indicator, I think, in the health of the community. We are just about ready to start the construction of a natural gas pipeline to the area. That's the largest population center in the United States. It does not have natural gas. It is a deep water port. We're just now getting the loops for access to the internet into the area. We're the last region of the state to get that kind of service. My point is that we are gradually putting together all the infrastructure that we need to start building on our economy. And this little is another little piece to make this a viable airport district and continue to upgrade and provide service to the South Coast. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for either Senator Messerly or Representative Berger? Do I understand this was the first airport district
in Oregon
adopted in the state, and the statute allowing for the creation of airport districts has been on the books since 1975? That's what our staff summary says. Not exactly a rush to the gate, was it?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Do you
Thank
want to stay
you,
there, Representative Berger, or do you want to come back?
I will stay here and welcome Darren Griffin and Gary Letelier. I'd like to add one thing to Senator Messerly's testimony, and that is that we have a regional hospital there with a cancer treatment radiation center, and the airport is used a lot by bringing in goods and services for our hospital, as well as about half of the planes that are flying in commercially, plus about 6 Learjets a day are coming in due to the creation of the world-class golf courses that are south of us. So with that, we'd just like to hear testimony from Gary Letelier.
All right, Mr. Letelier.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gary Letelier, and I am the executive director of the new Coosa County Aviation District. As Joanne said, it's the first in the state, and it also is the only air carrier commercial service airport on the coast of Oregon. As such, it's heavily regulated by the federal government under various statutes, and several of those require that in this transfer of property and governance that we make certain assurances to the federal government, and this sort of strikes to the heart of one of those, which is that we not only have to show them that that we're able to run a federally certificated airport, but also to manage it financially. In searching the various ORSs governing Oregon municipalities that own and operate airports, we came across an anomaly that would not necessarily prevent our attorneys from making these assurances, but most certainly would put the district at a disadvantage to other municipally owned and operated airports and other tax-exempt municipality facilities, and would, in our opinion, needlessly burden taxpayers at the county level. Section 1 of ORS 307.120 per N1 says was originally written to reference real property owned or leased by any municipality, dock, commission, city, or port organized under the laws of Oregon as exempt from taxation to the extent to which the property is used as an airport. Property owned or leased by the municipality located within or contiguous to the airport is, quote, used as an airport within the meaning of the subsection if the proceeds of the lease, sublease, or rental are used by the municipality for the purposes of maintenance and operation of an airport. Any property used exclusively for airport purposes under this statute would also be exempt from taxation. After reviewing this language with our attorneys and out of an abundance of caution, our district board directors sought out support from Representative Verger and Senator Messerly to make some simple changes to this ORS. Actually, three words, any airport district, thereby ensuring that the new Coos County Airport District will continue to operate with the same tax exemption that it has always had. Our board wants to thank you for the opportunity to put this testimony into your record and ask you to support this measure. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Questions? So as I understand then, what the sense is that this bill just makes explicit what is probably implicit already in the statute.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So that anybody looking at it can find the words airport district right in the exemption and not have to backtrack to get there.
That's correct. And again, it's because this statute has never been used. We're the first, and so we think we're exempt, but we really want to make sure.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Then Mr. Littlemson. Mr.
Griffin.
Yes, thank you. I was getting there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Darren Griffin. I'm the State Airports Manager with the Oregon Department of Aviation. My testimony is mostly redundant to what you've already heard this morning. The Department of Aviation supports the Coos County Airport District. What this is an attempt to correct the situation. All public use airports in Oregon are intended to be exempt from property taxes. This would ensure that the newly formed Coos County Airport District would also have that same property tax exemption. It basically results in a status quo for the North Bend Airport and the Coos County property tax collections. That's basically my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Griffin? I see that this was before the General Government Committee, and it looks like they passed it over actually with a due pass recommendation. Is that right? Not
okay.
Just not just a lateral transfer, but a due pass to the Revenue Committee. All right. Does anybody else wish to be heard then on House Bill 2454? Okay. Thank you very much. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2454 and open a work session. I'll wait till Representative Verger gets up, and then we'll let her make the motion. It's going the wrong way. Okay. Here she comes.
Maybe now we know why it sits 1965.
The circuitous route. Do you want to make the motion on your bill?
Oh, I would.
All right. Sure. Representative Verger.
That seems like a conflict or something.
Oh, no.
But if you'll allow it.
It's called pride of ownership.
I would be very happy, Mr. Chairman, to move House Bill 2454 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Verger moves House Bill 2454 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right. Please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Barr.
Aye.
Pass.
Aye.
Austin.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Williams.
Aye.
Chair Shadow.
Aye. House Bill 2454 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and I'm going to just guess you're going to want to carry it.
I would.
Okay. So done. So let it be written.
So let it be written.
So let it,
so
be,
let
done.
It be done.
That's what the Yul Brynner said. Okay. Let's go to House Bill 2213. Open up a public hearing on that, and Dick is coming up. We're back to transportation. While he's coming, Mr. Tyler, why don't you come on forward? Oh, you
read these 2 minutes.
Bringing your friends to go with you. Okay, Dick.
Morning, Chair Chatterley, members of the committee, Dick Yates, Legislative Revenue. House Bill 2213 essentially rewrites most of Chapter 367 dealing with transportation bonding. It allows Treasury to issue a new type of bond, a grant anticipation revenue bond, at the request of the Department of Transportation for financing transportation projects that are eligible to receive federal funds. requires the department to prepare a revenue declaration or an indenture prior to issuing the bonds, which specifies the revenues pledged and other matters affecting the issuance of the revenue bonds, identifies revenues that may be pledged, repeals or modifies existing statutes relating to the highway user tax bonds, the infrastructure bonds, and the short-term borrowing, defines terms, declares an emergency, and takes effect upon passage.
All right. Mr. Tyler.
Good morning, Chair Shetterly, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dave Tyler, Chief Financial Officer for the Oregon Department of Transportation. With me today is Doug Goh, who is a partner in the Portland office of Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe. Doug is our bond counsel and has been for the last almost 4 years now. I'm very pleased to be here to talk with you about House Bill 2213. This is something that up until the last 3 or 4 years, you did not hear ODOT talking about either bonds or debt or leveraging our financial resources. So what you have before you right now is really the first revision to ODOT's bonding statutes in many, many years. They hadn't been necessary because we were not active in the debt issuance market. But with the advent of the OTIA program 2 years ago, we are active in the bond issuance market now and leveraging resources for transportation projects. The prior to OTIA and a small issue in 2000, ODOT had not issued new money bonds for highway projects since 1974. That issue was refunded in 1992. Revenue bonds for the light rail project in Portland were issued in 1994 and refunded in 2002, but those funds were backed by lottery revenues and not ODOT's highway fund. Much of the language you see within House Bill 2213 are housekeeping corrections recommended by both legislative counsel and our bond counsel, Mr. Goh. For example, there are many cases in which the word shall is being changed to must, or the phrase Oregon Transportation Infrastructure Fund is being changed to Infrastructure Fund, mainly housekeeping corrections. However, there are 4 major and substantive changes that I'd like the committee to be aware of. First, within sections 2 through 11 of the bill, on pages 1 through 4, we're requesting the authority to issue Grant Anticipation Revenue Vehicle Bonds, or GARVEs. Similar legislation was introduced in the 2001 session by Senator George. This is an important additional tool to ODOT's bonding program, as it allows us to further leverage funds provided by the Federal Highway Administration. The second change is within Section 18 of the bill, appearing on pages 8 and 9. ODOT, acting through the state treasurer, is authorized to enter into short-term borrowing arrangements. Existing language requires the borrowings to mature within 1 year. We're requesting the authority to have those extend to 3 years and also increase the maximum amount from $25 million to $100 million. The third change is within Section 19 of the bill on page 9, dealing with our authority to issue general obligation bonds. We do not have any intention of issuing general obligation bonds, but it does change our ability to borrow and the maximum amount we can borrow. We could not issue these bonds without the specific approval of both the Treasurer and DAS through the annual bond limit bill. The fourth and final change is contained within Section 26. Currently, ODOT's bonds can only extend out to a maturity of 30 years. We're requesting the authority to extend those maturities out to the maximum expected economic life of the projects being financed. This provides, this provides additional flexibility in funds management tools for ODOT because some of the bridges we're looking at constructing could extend the life of the project and the asset out from 75 to 100 years. So we're just trying to provide additional leverage. In all cases, irrespective of the type of debt we're considering issuing, we work very closely with our bond financing team, which is Chuck Smith in the Treasurer's Office, Director of Debt Management. Chuck is supportive of this legislation. He's not able to be here today. I believe those conclude my formal remarks. I'd be happy to respond to any questions the committee might have.
All right, questions. Or Doug, did you have some comments you wanted to add?
Chair Shetterly, members of the committee, I'm Doug Goh at 224 Northwest 13th Avenue, and I'm a partner at Orrick Harrington. Just a couple brief comments, Mr. Chairman, just to add to Mr. Tyler's remarks. The so-called Garvey bonds is something that is a tool that has been used successfully by a number of states around the country and is just another tool to give to ODOT some flexibility if the proper circumstances arise, that they will have that tool that they can use in the future. Otherwise, this bill, as you can see, really reflects cleanup changes to clarify some interpretive issues that we as bond counsel and the rest of the finance team for ODOT have encountered over the last several years. And then third, I would characterize the changes as really modernizing ODOT statutes, because it's been so long since they really had a financing program, to bring it up to date and consistent with other state financing statutes. I'd be happy to address any questions the committee may have as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Tyler, one of the comments you made early on was the Garvey bonds would leverage federal money. And I think I understood the comment that it would allow for more flexibility. In what way would it leverage federal money?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Barnhart, we're able to do a couple of things with federal funds that we receive right now. First, we could do a technique called advanced construction, which allows us, rather, most construction projects we have contain a 20 or a 10% match of state funds to go with the federal funds devoted to the project. But through the issuance of Garvey bonds, we would be able to use 100% of the federal funds going directly to the projects and hanging on to the state funds to be devoted to other projects coming through the STIP. So it's both a leveraging technique and a flexibility technique.
All right. Second, if I may, second issue. Thank you. That's very helpful. Second question, and this is maybe a two-parter. What's the maximum period of time that you can borrow money for now by bonding? And why would you want to extend it out to 75 or 100 years when you're going to vastly increase your interest payment over that time with very little reduction in the payments by the year, since most of it, at least for the first 60 years or so, would be interest payments?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Barnhart, very good questions. Current statutes limit our maturity periods for our highway user tax revenue bonds to 30 years. With the possibility of constructing projects that could extend the life of the asset to 75 to 100 years, there could be circumstances in which we would like to go longer than 30 years. We would certainly never go to 75 or 100 years, but in some cases, from a cash flow standpoint, given interest rates, 35 or 40 might be defensible from a cash management standpoint. Most of the borrowings that we contemplate at this point would be in the range of 20 to 30 anyway. For example, our first issue of OTIA bonds that we closed in May of 2002 had a 25-year maturity period. But under the OTIA program at present, we are We are balancing the legislative authorization for up to $500 million in borrowing with a limit on biennial debt service of $71.2 million. So our goal is to get to $500 to fund all of the projects, but in some cases we will be adjusting the maturity periods to try to make sure we get to that goal. So there would be no intent of going out beyond 50 years unless there's some really extreme circumstances, but it could well be beneficial for us to go beyond 30.
And then a follow-up question.
Follow-up?
What controls are there in this bill or in statute otherwise to oversee those determinations that you were just describing?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Barnhart, we work extremely closely. That, as you know, all issues of debt within State of Oregon agencies are authorized and completed by the Treasurer's Office. So we work closely with our internal financing team, including Mr. Goh and our financial underwriters and our financial advisors, but also Chuck and Mr. Smith and his folks in Treasurer Edwards' office have the final say on the structures and the timings of all of our issues. And last but not least, there is a biennial bond limit bill that the legislature adopts during each legislative session to contain maximums for debt issuance with state agencies. So those are the controls.
Okay. I guess I have one more follow-up then, or maybe
right.
Two. So in that bond bill that you just described, does the legislature determine those maximum maturity periods or something else?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Barnhart, no. What they determine, each agency requests a maximum debt issuance number within the bond bill.
Okay.
So the terms or the interest rates or the timings of the issues are not contained within that bill, sir.
And the very final one, if I may. Is the Treasurer approved this bill? Treasurer supports the bill.
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Barnhart, we've had extensive conversations with Chuck Smith, Director of Debt Management, and he's not able to be here today, but he is supportive of the bill and thinks it's a good idea.
Thank you. Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Pass.
Thank you. I guess this might fall under the category of bonding 101, but I just one sort of basic question is, Section 10 here is, how is it that we can depend upon the credit of the federal government for federal funding and back these bonds, as it says, not by the state, not by the agency, but by the federal government? I mean, how do we do that? How is it that we will understand or know that the federal government will, in fact, be funding transportation programs 10, 20 years from now?
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Hass, this is a good question for my friend Mr. Goh, who has seen more Garvey issues. This is a new area for ODOT and the state, and it's an excellent reason as to why we rely on external experts and resources to help us through these things. So I'm going to turn to Doug on this one.
Madam Vice Chair, Representative Hass, it is an excellent question, and both the rating agencies and the financial markets reflect that in doing Garvey bonds, that because there are certain vagaries in the federal appropriation and highway system, the typically Garvey bonds are done for a much shorter maturity period, a period where in terms of the federal transportation bills and horizons and authorizations, you do bonds that are within that time horizon rather than doing, say, 25 or 30 year bonds. Most of them have been in the, I think, the 7 to 10 year range is my recollection. So it's a very appropriate question, and I think, again, any Garvey bonds, as Mr. Tyler has described, there would be a close working relationship with the Treasurer's Office, with the rating agencies, with the investment banking and financial advisory team that's available to ODOT to structure, given the current state of federal appropriations and so forth, figuring out a maturity that would be appropriate to the risk. But it's important to note that these are revenue bonds, and so that, in fact, the investor is the entity who is taking the risk that those federal monies are not available. But again, they're the ones who are going to drive that shorter maturity. So it's really not a bond 101 question. It's a very appropriate question.
Madam Chair, if I could just follow up.
Follow up?
that makes sense. So it's actually them taking the risk. It's not anything else. This is a little bit like the accounting shift bill we did last week, where I don't want to argue the policy, but if it needs technical changes and cleanup, let's do that. And that's what this bill does here. But as a policy, I still think we're going down the wrong track when we're leaning more and more towards borrowing and bonding for transportation projects. And that's a huge concern I have, that we're just getting into this further than we need to be. And I just wish we were paying as we go along as opposed to bonding.
Other questions? Or comments? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we will close the public hearing, and the chairman has requested that we open a work session. Work session is now open. Would we like to begin some discussion?
Madam Chair?
Sure.
I do share Representative Hunt's, Hassan's. I'm sorry.
Hunt's concerned about this too.
apprehension regarding our continued reliance on borrowing money to get today's projects taken care of. I do understand the gravity of our situation regarding transportation in the state, however, and I think it's appropriate at this point in time that we do leverage ourselves against the people a little bit, bearing in mind that it's not something that we want to continue to do if we can avoid it.
Any other comments? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, if we are going to borrow money to do anything, borrowing money for capital expenses is the time that we ought to be borrowing money, not for regular operating expenses. And I agree, especially with the last comment that Representative Farr made, that we're at the stage with the kind of backlog of maintenance that we need to do, that we really are in a position where we need to borrow money. But given that, borrowing money for 20 or 30 years on an asset that's going to last for 50 or 60 years is a reasonable and prudent thing to do when you need the asset, like a bridge. It's not a reasonable thing to do when you're borrowing money for current expenses and expecting that you're going to have to take that money to pay that out of money that you need for current expenses in future biennia. And that's the argument that's the situation that I would be worried and concerned about, and I have been worried and concerned about. I'm a lot less worried about borrowing money in this situation. I am concerned, however, about the idea of running the maturity rates way out. If we can get money at 1, 2, or 3%, and I don't know what the rates are that we're talking about, then extending rates, extending maturity periods slightly past 30 years might make sense from a cash flow point of view. But the interest that you pay at that point starts to become astronomical. Not just big, but astronomical. And that's a thing that concerns me about the way this bill is drafted. And I don't know whether there are adequate controls on that or not. I'm hoping the Treasurer would provide those. But those are the kinds of questions that I have today.
Other comments or questions? I think those are very thoughtful. I appreciate that. And I always like to see the committee always look at any concerns that we might have, especially in this. I know that all of you have seen that it did go before the House Committee on House Transportation and was recommended to the Revenue Committee with a do-pass recommendation. And so if there's no further discussion, I'll call for the vote.
I think we didn't have a motion.
Oh, we need a motion. Excuse me. I'm sorry. That's right. I was going to just go right there. Madam Chair. I'm open for vote.
I move that we send House Bill 2213 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Representative Farr has moved that House Bill 2213 go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. No objections?
Aye.
Mm-hmm.
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Hopkins?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Aye.
Madam Chair, and we need to carry it.
I believe you misspoke. You said 2217. I have 2213.
I said 2213.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I wanted to make sure we were getting the right bill there.
That's right. That's right. And do I have a carry it? Okay. Representative Farr will carry the bill. I'm going to depend on staff. Is there anything else that I need to do? If there's no other business to come for this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.